having been in the security space for 20 years at this point, and as a marketer, the partner that I've always been with are the sales folks, the sales teams, the sales people, the sales managers who are on the front lines providing all of you with kind of information and bringing you through the process of actually buying products, buying solutions, et cetera. And I think to use my guest John Green's words of paint, you know, there's a broad brush that kind of goes over sales sometimes. And I think there's some misperceptions of what it takes to actually be in sales, especially at a successful security company. And so talk to John a little bit about his theater background, how that helps in sales, some of the things that potentially people don't know about when it comes to the sales process, and really why being in security sales primarily is demands a high knowledge of the market as well as a lot of passion.
You're listening to Security Nation with host Kyle Flaherty.
So the first question I actually had was, I was on your LinkedIn profile.
Yep.
Like any good salesperson, I was using LinkedIn. And you studied theater.
Yeah.
So does that make you, and you're obviously, you know, high energy, you love to perform.
Yeah.
Is that a key for a good salesperson?
You know what? I think so. I think having the ability to sort of turn it on is huge. And part of it is being able not only to suspend a little bit of disbelief for yourself and to just buy into what you're doing and going after it and helps you take your licks,
mm-hmm.
right? Going to 9 auditions and getting no, you're too ugly, like 9-10 times. Like, that's part of being a salesperson, part of the endurance factor,
yeah.
I think has something to do with it. But being able to own a room, being able to read an audience, understand what lands.
Yeah, so that actually, the read part's interesting to me because obviously you got to build a relationship with someone pretty quick.
Yeah.
And now in your role, obviously, teaching people how to do that too. But how hard is that to do over the phone in a lot of cases?
Man, it is difficult.
Yeah.
It is difficult. And it's night and day. And there are like definitely tools and tricks. And a lot of what we did here when I first started, when we were a way smaller company, was drilling some of the do's and don'ts that exist in like an inside model. But yeah, I think a lot of it really just comes down to the basics. And it's listening. And ultimately, when we're in a room with someone, we can listen with our 5 senses, but we only have audio when we're over the phone. So just getting really good at understanding cues and being able to prompt an audio response or an oral response from a customer where normally you're looking to see if they're checking their phone in a conference room or if they're tickling each other under the desk or what have you.
So when you're listening, what are you listening for? In terms of, is it, they're not going to just come out and say, this is my problem, this is what I want to buy.
Well, sometimes they do, and that's and that makes it even harder. Because,
really?
Why
is that harder?
Because it's like someone coming to a doctor's and saying, doctor, I believe I have cancer in my knee.
Okay.
And it's like, no, sir, like you're just overweight and you strained it.
Right.
It's like, no, I'm confident, and I've talked to a couple of other medical professionals, like, I have this and I need you to go fix this. And if you can, I'll go to someone who can. And so when people are self-prescribing, you get into this thing, especially for junior people. I'm guilty of this even now. You're behind your number and you're like, well, the guy says this is what he wants. Like, I guess I'll just give it to him.
Right.
Or whatever the closest facsimile is of that.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of what's difficult in those situations when they tell you exactly what the requirements are is you miss the whole backstory and the drivers and... And ultimately, it's bad for you as a business person, but it's not good for the customer either.
Right.
And you're doing them a disservice by letting them lead you, and as opposed to making it conversational and a mutual discussion on what's going on.
And figuring out what they need, not necessarily what they want right then.
And we see that shift, too, because when we were not a known name brand, we were educating.
Yeah.
So we were telling people, hey, like, you don't know where your vulnerability is. Whoa. And Sands is saying you should be doing this. Why aren't you? And having those conversations. Now that the industry is more mature or on the path towards maturity in the U.S. anyway, it's a little bit difficult. And that's we were talking about the signal-to-noise thing is these people are being prescribed or they're self-prescribing stuff. And sometimes it's the flavor of the moment, and it's not actually getting to the real root cause of some of the bigger inefficiencies they're having with securing this stuff.
So do you, but so on that signal to noise rate, you know, the last 5 years, I mean, I've been in security for 20 years.
Yeah.
I've never seen it like this.
Sure.
And so from a marketing standpoint, it's super difficult for us. It's really challenging to just rise above all of that stuff and not, I guess, rest back on the kind of what I would call weak marketing and FUD marketing and all those different types of things. But for you guys, when you're on the phone, you're talking to these guys, is it just that much more difficult because now they've been prescribed, quote unquote, by 50 different doctors, not three different doctors.
Oh, yeah.
And you got to circumnavigate all of that stuff.
Yeah, I that's hard. Yeah. And I think a lot of it, like getting back to your original question around like the theater background and the performance stuff, is if you're actively listening to someone and you're giving them the benefit of the doubt and you're able to have a real conversation like and take a very inhuman thing, which is grabbing someone at their desk unawares and turning it into like a human experience where they feel less like you, they've been cold called and more that like they bumped into an old friend in the hallway, or in some cases like the interesting person on the train who's reading a book that you wish that you had the capability to read or the time to read.
Right. Yeah.
You know, ultimately if you can try to transform yourself into that person, then the first 30 seconds of a cold call is where you're gonna have the best situations and ultimately where you'll have the best long lasting relationships, the kind of people that will continue to use Rapid7 as they go to the next two or three jobs, and they'll call you for recommendations that have nothing to do with anything in our wheelhouse, purely because they know that you know the industry and you'll point them in the right direction.
So that gets to one of the questions I wanted to ask was why security for you?
You know what? It's a hindsight question because I literally responded to this job on a Craigslist ad.
Yeah.
I was a construction worker.
Yeah.
And in the daytime, and then I would wet wipe myself in the back of my beat up car and do professional productions in Boston at night.
Okay.
And it was just a drag, and it was really, and I just stumbled into the situation. It was the right place at the right time, the right company, the right industry. I think tech in Boston was like just about to start to hit its stride, where it was a desirable thing for people to come out of business school to want to go do, as opposed to maybe it was, who wants the cold call? Like, let's get into finance, right? It was more tried and true Bostonian industry. And I was just like a blue-collar guy who was looking for a different option that had some of the soft skills that go along with being in sales, and I got really lucky. And I think what kept me in it, even though I took a pay cut the first 2 years I was doing the job from when I was managing big municipal construction projects, was this is a really dynamic place. Not just the company. The company, of course, is cool, but security as a whole is moving really quick. And the real value that customers were finding wasn't necessarily like a widget or like a hard and fast thing of like or hard and fast set of requirements. It was the ability to adapt quickly. And that comes from having great conversations and forming really interesting relationships and being able to listen. And that happened at this company on the from the executive level on down with salespeople and product and watching that change. But being able to connect people, it was just like a really dynamic, interesting thing. And I realized Rapid7 is special in a lot of ways because of that. But for the most part, the industry is really special because we're not dealing with, you know, in some cases like high finance, you know, 50-year-old financial models, right? You know, I'm sure there's some interesting stuff about finance. I don't know what's doing it. But, like, ultimately, like, this thing changes so quick.
Yep.
Week to week, it's fun to be in part of. And that's why I've stuck around, even though, you know, I took my hits the first couple of years.
No, and that's, I mean, for me, it's, I always tell my wife when I go to RSA or Black Hat or whatever it is, like, that's my high school reunion.
Yeah.
Like, every year. Because I've been working with these guys for so long.
Yeah.
And it's just, and you're kind of, you know, you've dealt with that with them for so long that I think it creates really great relationships. So, all right, so you come on in that role, you know, you don't know security at that point. How do you get going? Like, how do you learn about this stuff to the point where when you make that phone call, obviously there's training and all that stuff, but like, you went off and did stuff on your own.
Yeah.
Like, what was it that made it work?
You know what? It was like, at the time, and I don't even know if this could happen now. Like, maybe I just kind of hit it at a special time in where the industry was in the maturity space. But I would have, like, educational conversations with people that were in the security, analysts, security engineers, security managers, that were like hands-on with this stuff, and talking to them about what we're doing and educating on them, and stuff would come up, priorities would come up, different things would come up, and that's what I loved about it, is like, I was just getting on-the-job education, and that's the one thing, like, whenever I have a bad cold call, or like a bad conversation, or I'm treated, you know, and I'll take the fault of my own, like, I get a little too excited, I maybe drop a couple buzzwords, I'm lazy, whatever it is, right? Yeah. The one thing that I think I always have that a lot of security professionals don't is just perspective. Mm. I'm talking to upwards of 100 to 150 security people a week from all sorts of organizations and every different vertical and every level of maturity. I don't think there are many people outside of the people that you see at every single conference and are like the professional glad handers that you see at the booths and stuff that have that level of perspective that the sales reps at these kinds of companies do.
Yeah.
And so being able to have like good conversations was super important to, but immediately, like within 6 months, I had this wealth of perspective.
Yep.
And because I'm naturally trying to listen and understand problems, if it drifted beyond Rapid7 scope, because I'm a human being and not a robot trying to pitch, I would just learn things about, you know, stuff that we don't do and concerns that go way beyond or where the reports go when they leave the hands of the guy who's got his hands on the keyboard or the mouse, whatever.
Well, to your point earlier, it's like that's more of what they need and less of what maybe they've been prescribed.
Right.
Right? So then you're going to find out, well, it sounds like you actually have a problem with blank.
Yeah.
And they're going to do that. So I find it interesting, like, obviously your background and then coming into sales, but now as you're building sales teams, what do you look for? Like, what's the kind of, you know, not ideal because that's just not right, but, like, what are the kind of the characteristics you're looking for?
Yeah, I think ultimately when you're talking to people in sales, the reason why I got hired, and I think it's a good, because I feel like I'm a success story, at least, because I would have been putting sewer pipes in the ground had it not worked out.
Right.
So, pretty cool for me.
Right.
But they said, you know, be interested and interesting.
Yep.
And have a dynamic personality, a willingness to learn, and a drive to be the hottest working person in the office.
Right.
Anything around methodology and stuff like that, it's going to change. It's going to evolve. As a company matures and changes and evolves, sales processes change. As new products roll out, become more complex.
Yep.
You're always going to have to be on the learning curve there. But if you don't generally like gathering information and trying to understand new things about the world, you're not doing a good job for your customers, right? And if you're not able to be an interesting enough person where they want to talk to you and they see the number up on the phone and like, I don't have anything for them.
Right.
I know I'm going to have at least have a good conversation for 5 minutes, and it's going to be a distraction from the spreadsheet that I've been tearing through for 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, like, it's raw stuff that I look for when I'm building a team, and the drive and the hustle that was going to push someone to continue to keep that stuff is huge.
It's funny because last week I had Josh Feinblum on, and I asked him the same question about how he's building his security teams. And his answer, although a little bit different, really had the same type of structure of the kind of people he looks for. He doesn't immediately go and look for a security professional.
Yeah.
Like, that would only make sense, right? I was like, oh, he's going to say something kind of boring and just be like, oh, I'm going to go,
minimum.
They need a certification. Yeah. But he's like, you know, I'll probably get it wrong, but it's like, it was all about creativity, willingness to learn, the ability to take a ton of information, digest it, and be okay with that instead of like cowering, because our jobs are all about just sucking, you know, from this fire hose at all times. So I find it interesting that from sales to the actual security folks, there's that same mentality of how we're going to hire those folks.
Yeah.
I think people work out better if you do that, right?
Sure.
Overall. So, and you've been now, what's it been 5 or 6 years now,
yeah,
right?
With
Rapid7.
Yeah.
What's the biggest, not difference in the company, but difference in the industry and just as a salesperson, like, what has changed the most?
You know, I think with the advent of, like, the big publicized breaches and stuff, definitely sales and companies had a bit of a windfall. It was great for the industry, like someone who's making money on commissions. Like, it was great. Everyone enjoyed that for a minute. The byproduct of that, and I think what we're seeing, and we heard it in some of the earnings calls with some of the people in the space, that were like, if earnings were off or things are missed or pushed, right?
Yeah.
A lot of what happened was when you get the focus and the budget and the headcount and the demand on the industry to start pumping out people to fill some of the empty spots, to really maintain the stuff, and the demands on the vendors to build products that are going to be able to scale with the new challenges that are out there. When that kind of money enters a market, the people who control the purse strings are now looking at you.
Right.
So when we were operating, when I started, and we were like a 150-person company with huge territories and this ripping and roaring Wild West, probably like broke a lot of eggs and burned a lot of bridges at that time too, you were able to call a manager of information security. In a lot of cases, you could do a demo, and by the end of the week, he would sign a quote and sent it over to you for a significant amount of money.
Right.
Now, we have very standard practices, products that are like highly vetted out. And this is before even being Gartner top ranked or just after it.
Yeah.
Where like we have to go through immense contract negotiations and back and forths and have statements of work for very generic kinds of services. Not only because of our internal requirements shifted, but the customer, because they have the windfall of like, okay, we're investing in you, you have a seat at the table.
Right.
All of the processes that go along with that have now entered, and it's something that, as a security salesman, you weren't dealing with two, three years ago.
Right.
Wasn't there. It didn't exist.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's funny. I didn't really think about that, but the maturity of the market has made it that much more difficult. Not difficult. That's the wrong word. You know, it's just, it's slower now. And it's more examined.
I think
that's a good thing.
Methodical.
In a lot of ways. It's, yeah, there's methods to it. I think that, and I don't know, maybe I hadn't thought about this, but I think that also serves to get rid of some of the vendors that spread some of that kind of FUD way more marketing than they are actual product. Because once you get into a POC, once you get in, like, and how much money was wasted during those Wild West days? And it wasn't just here, it was everywhere. I was living that dream too,
sure,
down in Austin at the time. And it was a great time to be in that mode. But at the end of the day, if the product didn't work in 6 months, you lost that entire relationship. So it didn't matter what happened the next time you called them.
Yeah.
And so now at least we have, I think, some safety nets or checks in there that people are actually thinking about this stuff a little bit more.
Yeah, I had a call yesterday with one of the reps was working an opportunity, and we had one of the senior SEs, one of the people that do a lot of the big enterprise deployments for us, and we were really jazzed about it, and it was really refreshing because prior to the proof of concept, we had 3 calls and a really solid back and forth regarding their requirements. And it's the kind of thing where a lot of times, even still, even like with the sort of scrutiny that we talked about, the scrutiny comes on the back end. But now it's better now where we're engaging and we can actually have an honest conversation and disqualify ourselves in some cases. Like, hey, we can't do this.
Yep.
And whereas as like reps and people trying to like find a way to spend their time, having the POC that goes on for 6 months for no reason and the outcome is never looking good. And a lot of it's just because the customer themselves don't even really know what they're looking for in the course of it. Maybe we tricked them into even doing it in the first place, which is handy to be able to do. But it's just really good. It's a little bit more methodical. The space is slowed. There's a few more controls that sometimes benefit the customer when it comes to negotiation or right? Yep. But in the end, it allows us to engage in a way that's a lot more considerate.
Right.
You know, I know that sounds contradictory to the self-prescription, but I think a lot of the stuff in the realm that I was just talking about comes from like good market research and back past experience and just being able to sit down and understand vulnerability management or application security or incident response or DLP or what have you, enough where you can put together a 2 or 3 page spreadsheet with hard requirements and do's and don'ts, I think says something about engaging with a customer or not. That's not super common, but it's getting more common.
Yeah. I think we're all getting smarter in a way. What's something about being a salesperson that you don't think people realize?
Oh, man. That, I don't know. That could go on a lot of, this answer could go on a lot of, I could get really sad with it. Right. I'm a human. I'm right. a man.
You made me cry.
I have a life. I have feelings too.
It's not a day I don't leave and I don't have tears.
No, no. And then I think ultimately, like, there are a lot of bad salespeople out there. Like, I think the good salespeople ultimately care.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can't really do the job effectively, especially in an industry where, like, just even the words, if you, like, get down to, like, the linguistic level, like, vulnerability management.
Yeah.
Like, think of that. Like, I'm helping you manage your vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I've paid a lot of money in my own personal life to help someone help me manage my... No, I'm just kidding. Right. But, like, still, like, it's, like, one of those things. Like, it's super sensitive
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
So, if you're not coming it from a direction where... you are trying to solve a problem and you actually care, you're not doing a good job. And I feel like a lot of times there are people at bad companies or don't have this sort of inherent ability in them, or I don't know what the deal is.
Yeah.
But we are painted with a broad brush of that. And I feel like you got to give up people an opportunity to know, like, most of the better guys that are out there, they actually care, and we don't want to sell you something you're not going to use.
Yep.
We don't want to burn a bridge or trick you into buying anything or fool you.
Yep.
It's really like, you know, there's enough people out there to talk to that have a problem that we can solve. We don't want to do it with someone that really doesn't need it.
You know, and it's, you know, I think there's a few groups that get that broad brush to use your words, and I think. I felt that way through my career a little bit in marketing. It's like,
I probably painted you with that brush.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And I painted you.
Yeah, yeah.
And you do an eye roll and all that kind of stuff. But I think, and I've said this to my team, it's, we're not curing cancer.
Yeah.
We're not, you know, curing world hunger or something like that. But we're doing something that's pretty important for these people. Like you said, like, there's a guy at the other end of the phone whose job it is to make sure that his company manages the risks that they have.
Yeah.
And if they don't, that's his job.
Yeah.
And then he's going home to his kids or, you know, whatever it is and saying, you know,
yeah,
I'm gone, I got fired, all those things. Like, and if you can't think about that and you don't have that in you from just an emotion standpoint, you're not going to make it in
this. It's really weird. Yeah, I had a conversation. We have, like, a brand new group of guys that just started this week. And so I do, like, a very early, like, hey, this is the market. This is who we sell to.
Yeah.
This is kind of why it matters. Here are a couple of tricks of the trade and ways to start off. Like, you know, day two, hour-long meeting, we're going over it. And one of the things, being that people are so hard to retain, both in sales, marketing, anywhere in the security industry, because it is so hot, people want to poach top talent. They want to grab the right people. But particularly when we're talking to people that are in the management capacity and the accounts that we're trying to sell into, a lot of what I was talking about yesterday is using my past as an analogy, because I'm kind of a dummy. I don't know much about a lot of things. So I break it down in a way that I can understand and empathize with. I remember working for a construction company and, like, you know, I got a sledgehammer and a pick. And it's like, you got to finish this by the end of the day. And I'm looking at the company across the street with a brand new pneumatic jackhammer.
Right, right.
And it doesn't even make a sound. They got the earphones on. And I got an old Italian guy throwing sand at me, telling me to break stone quicker. That's part of the gig as well. It's like, guys, like, the opportunity cost you're losing by holding on to outdated technology.
Yeah.
And having people to try to solve the problem harder and not smarter in a lot of ways is driving people to the companies that people are lining up to get a job with, would love to go work for.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
And, like, I don't want to call anyone out, but one of the things that I find always really surprising, and it's, like, a really telling thing for me, like, we're probably not going to do a deal with this company, is after you have a conversation with someone, they send you their resume and LinkedIn to be like, hey, I'd love to come work for Rapid7. Like, you guys are cool. Right. Like, I know you're hiring pen testers. Like, I used to do that a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And for me, like it's not just reporting to the board and to the audit guys and everything. A lot of it is that you have these guys that are in the trenches for you doing the right work. Just make sure they have the right tools to do
exactly.
it. And it's not always us, right? But
of course. Right. And you got to be okay with saying that. And that goes back to the caring. All right. Last question. If it's not security software that you're selling, what is it that you're selling?
Oh, if I were to leave?
Yeah.
Jeez, I don't know, man.
What do you think you'd just kill it at?
I might, I don't know, myself, just on a street corner. I don't know. Yeah, I think ultimately, the other stuff that I'm sort of interested in is I'm a storyteller, right? So I don't want to leave security. I love Rapid 7. I like what I'm doing here. But if I were to do something differently, I would love to look at like some of the content marketing, like storytelling, advertisement, media platforms, because then it's a little bit more like I'm in the trenches with helping people come up with strategy and writing a script on that. Yeah. So like I could see myself doing that.
Yep.
Or like selling consulting and like being able to really craft stuff that are a little bit outside of the realm of software. But ultimately, like, the space that we're in is so dynamic and so interesting right now. Like, I don't know. It would take a weird
I keep telling thing. Myself that, man, I'd love to go and do consumer marketing, or I'd love to go and do blah, 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 blah. And I've been doing this now for 20 years, and I just can't get out of security.
Sure.
It's just, it is. It's fun. It's dynamic. It changes all the time. So,
I think the people are really interesting, too.
Yeah, you know.
I think that's part of it is, I'm not a security guy, like, in my mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, an element to these guys that and gals that we're working with that they have, like, kind of, like, a personal mission. And when you're trying to help someone else, like, sell whatever there is, and, like, their mission is profit, and, like, I get that. I'm an American. I love it just as much as anyone else.
Yeah.
But, like, you have a lot of these dudes, and they fancy themselves, and in a lot of cases for the companies, they're putting the cape and boots on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's rad.
Yeah. Well, we were talking before we started recording, you know, the research from yesterday, the insulin pump vulnerabilities. It's like, you think vulnerabilities in your network are scary?
Yeah.
Someone can hack into the insulin pump that's embedded in, you know, my vein, and then I'm getting too much insulin?
Yeah.
That's scary. Like, why did Jay Radcliffe care to even do that? It's because he just wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And then they go and talk to Johnson & Johnson before. Like, I just love that whole process. And I do think part of it is, for those of us, too, who have been in it for a while now, it's like, it's now really cool.
Yeah.
Right? You got Mr. Robot. You got, all this cool kind of stuff out there. And you, like, you even tell your mom about the stuff. And they're like, oh, yeah, I hear about this stuff all the time.
Yeah.
Yahoo email. And sure. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, that's what we do.
Yeah. It's neat. And you're talking to passionate people.
Right.
And I ultimately, like, I can't imagine having if I had to talk to 150 people in a week or 200 people in a week, and everyone I'm talking to is a dud, and they don't care, imagine that. That'd be brutal.
Exactly. So, awesome. Thank you, man.
Awesome.
That was great. It was good to hear another side of the story that I don't think everyone gets to hear.
All right, cool. So.